Welcome to another episode of That So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil on the ones and twos. We are off and rolling on the first week of August. Our special guest today is former Cincinnati Mayor Charlie Lucan, who is now a lawyer with the Calfee Law Firm, a huge Ohio law firm. He does government relations work and some legal work for them now. But Charlie Lucan on .. He is so plugged in and engaged in local politics and local issues. Looking forward to talking to him. He's been very outspoken about the parks levy. Certainly he's on the bank's joint steering committee, which never meets, but he's very much involved in what's going on at the banks, or at least is supposed to be involved in that. So looking forward to having him coming up here in just a few minutes. Sherry, I'll tell you what, you're coming off your week of vacation and right into it. The bank's craziness is going on, which it's like Groundhog Day.
I've been reading
years.
The entire week I was off. I did not stop reading the news. I stopped working, but I did not stop reading. I'm still an informed citizen.
So, you know, you come to City Hall yesterday and the budget committee, and it's banks and another city county fight over that. It's streetcar, another discussion over that. Sherry, I know people know all about that stuff, and certainly they can, if they want to know more, go to Cincinnati.com. But what I want to ask you is there anything else going on at City Hall unrelated to those two things?
You know, I'm actually getting ready to do an update on something. I feel like it was like the last big story before the pandemic out of City Hall. And it was a long time coming. Councilman Chris Seelbach proposed a plastic bag ban. And we were on the steps of City Hall. There was no social distancing. It feels like 100 years ago and not just a few months ago. There was somebody dressed in like a costume of all plastic bags, and it just does seem like a long time ago. But this is something that is still very much a thing in Cincinnati. The legislation was on pause, but it's moving forward. There's going to be two public hearings related to this. One of them's today. Well, it'll be passed now when we actually post the podcast, but there's going to be another one in September where people can kind of have their say. But the ban, you know, it impacts businesses that sell food. This is grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, takeout, delivery services. Beginning next year, they are not going to be able to offer these flimsy single-use plastic bags in any capacity. And so that is still very much on the table. It's something that Kroger supports and other cities. We're certainly, this is not something where we get to say, oh, Cincinnati's the first to do this. But it's something that these, you know, these Democratic cities, urban areas are doing across the nation. And so I think it's going to be a big conversation coming up in September.
I totally forgot about that, Sherry. But
you know what I didn't expect? You know what the biggest pushback on it is? Is people saying, what am I going to do with my cat litter? And, you know, I use them for, you know, my walks with my dog and the cleanup. And so that's kind of on social. Like right after I wrote that story, a lot of the conversation went in that direction. And I'll be interested to see, you know, we haven't had like a real conversation in these, you know, committees yet about this. And so that's coming.
Wow. And I know you'll be all over it. And never a dull moment for what's going on in city politics. And never a dull moment of what's going on in city politics in 2020. So we'll look forward to seeing your coverage on that. Let's now, you know, we did a quick intro here. Let's jump over and get our special guest onto the hot seat, so to speak, and bring in Charlie Lucan. Special guest time of That's the Cincinnati Podcast. Pleased to welcome for the first time to the podcast, former Mayor Charlie Lucan. Charlie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't believe it's the first time on your podcast, though.
We're still a lot of guests to get to. We actually had our first repeat guest last week with Chris Finney. And I'll tell you, Charlie, you've been very active lately on Facebook. you're never one to mince words, and never one to shy away from your opinion and your take on the things that affect the city and the county. And one of those things, we'll jump right to it. You've been very critical of this parks levy. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I think you've been one of the leading critics of this, and I think you've been spot on. And really, they kind of did this under the cover of night, slipped it in there, snuck it in there, and we're going to have a 1.8 mil levy, as we know right now. There's still potential that they could pull that off on Wednesday, which would be today as people are listening to it. But, Charlie, talk about why you've been so passionate about that issue.
Well, Jason, and hi, Sherry. I thought it was kind of dumped on the public. And you, as you both know, there are a lot of organizations, zoos, social service agencies, seniors, whatever it is, and they kind of line up tax requests and at least vet them with the public a little bit, and they don't kind of dump them out of the blue. And this was dumped with no conversation, no plan. I have, for better or worse, had my differences with Great Parks over the years as the mayor of Cincinnati, and not feeling they contributed widely enough to the general benefit of the community. And this, without any plan, without any discussion, just being dumped on people, struck me as particularly tone deaf in a time of a pandemic. And it's a property tax, which I'm always careful about because they tend to be regressive, and people who own property pay them. So those were some of my thoughts. And I've talked to some elected officials on the Democratic side, and I'm not going to reveal any names, but suffice to say, they seem to be as surprised as I was. I think Great Parks is going to need the endorsement of at least one of the parties, and both of them. And my own view is it's unlikely they'll get them.
Do you, is part of why you've been so, opinionated and outspoken about this because of your history? I mean, you ran the parks levy for the city, specifically the city, in 2015. You helped. You did work with the park, the Hamilton County Parks, and helped them with the levy back in the early 2000s. Is this an area that's particularly that you're passionate about?
We had our, Great Parks and the city had our differences when they had their levy back in the early 2000s. And I did support it, but people will recall, no, they won't recall, but they may recall that I turned over to Great Parks the Fernbank Park down in Sailor Park, which is lovely. They've done a good job with it. I mean, I was trying to get some more investment from Great Parks in the city. John Cranley and the city did put a parks levy on for city parks, which is not Great Parks, and failed. But you talk about a levy that was scrutinized, it was scrutinized and re-scrutinized, and it failed, and that's fine. That's the process. But I don't think that this levy went through any of that. And I was also struck, Jason, by this sort of infrastructure levy, which went through all kinds, 5 years of conversation before it ever got on, lined up a lot of people, had a lot of conversation, it was very inclusive. And I just thought that process was a process that should be followed here and was not.
Without a realization that was even needed.
Yeah.
Jason's column really kind of broke this all loose last week, and you were quoted in it. But Jason was the one who asked, is there a plan? What's going on? And this came out of the blue in a press release. And I can't imagine the idea that somebody wouldn't expect a call and that what is the plan? To even have some sort of answer prepared.
Yeah, I think Jason's column kind of blew the lid off it. And I I made a couple incendiary comments, as I'm wont to do sometime. But, you know, I think
don't
Jason...
Don't ever change. And don't ever change.
Never.
I think...
Tell the truth.
I think Jason's column where he asked some of the people involved, what's the plan here? And they said, well, we're not quite sure. You know, if you're going to do a levy, a property tax levy, you better have a plan. Even if it's a bad one, you better be able to answer the question. Same as running for office, people first question, why do you want the job? And in this case, why do you want the money? And Jason correctly pointed out that they didn't have much to say when they were pressed on that question.
And I'd like to just sort of remind the listeners that they have until end of business day Wednesday to, you know, officially make this on the ballot or not. And there is the possibility, I think, that this could be pulled back and taken a little longer look at, and maybe look to next year or the year after that to push for another levy.
Yeah,
Charlie, I think would be the right thing to do by the public.
And if should that happen. I mean, what, you know, the system kind of works the way it's supposed to with you guys doing your job. I think the electeds are quietly, some of them at least, are quietly working for that result. And so, I think should that happen, all I can say is when somebody does the right thing, thanks. And if they do that and don't put the community through what's going to be a pretty awful campaign, I think they're going to lose unless they get the Democrats. And, you know, it's going to be a blue year, I think. And I don't think they're going to get the Democrats. So they probably would be well served to heed that advice, Jason.
Yeah, I don't think, speaking of levies, I know you just referenced it about the transportation, the bus levy. And I know that was a long, long, long time vision of your dad. It was a huge proponent of the bus system and making it better, making it more of a region wide. And I never asked you, like, what do you think your dad would have said about the transportation levy, countywide sales tax passing back in the primary?
I'm laughing because you asked me the other day if my mother was like my father, and I was like, oh God.
And God bless your mom.
I think, yeah, my mother is what we call long suffering. but anyway, my father was on council, maybe in the mayor, when the first when the bus system, believe it or not, in the 60s was a private enterprise, and it wasn't until the early 70s that it became a public enterprise, and my father was leading the charge, I think, along with people like Ted Berry at the time, on making it public so that it wasn't so expensive for people to ride the bus. And as you know, as the community has expanded, it was an earnings tax just in the city. My guess would be that he would have been real happy about this result, but you know, he was unpredictable. Is that fair? He was unpredictable. I mean, I loved him to death, but you never knew. And but I would think he would see this as a progression that he had advocated for a long, long time.
Yeah. Sherry?
Well, it'll be interesting. You know, that it starts kicking in October, and I think we're really going to start seeing the changes pretty quick. And it was just the kind of thing where, you know, there were a lot of plans. People asked about this plan over and over and over until there was finally a consensus. This was no easy process. And so it wasn't even just time consuming. Like, over time, it was getting everybody on the same page and working together, which is something that we are not seeing right now between the city and the county. We have this one example. But it's going to have to be the template for so much more to come. All these things we're talking about, they need to be talking to each other about the parks. They need to be talking to each other about MSD. They need to be talking to each other about the banks. But instead, I have a war of words every time I turn around. Good for my job. Not so good for the community, I don't think.
Well, we're getting some new blood as your article. I think it's your article this morning, with Betsy Sunderman and Jem Shell
I did see the profile of our new council women.
Yeah, and I thought the encouraging. I mean, it was a nice article, but I thought the encouraging thing was it's new blood. They seem to get along across a party line, and new blood doesn't hurt those positions sometimes. But you know, the city and the county, I got to admit, it's never been warm and fuzzy, and I've had my own problems there over the years, so I'm probably not one to point fingers, but the banks has been an irritant for 20 years.
I know, and you know, I can just remember like 2006, just, you know, the vision of what it was supposed to look like, very over the Rhine, like I might add. I keep going back to, you know, the first rendering that I ever saw and to what we have now, and it's just, it's hard to see, you know, and
We're not patient by nature, Sherry. And I think that there were, I saw the same rendering. I think Mayor Qualls was actually the one with the first bank steering committee or port authority that I still remember the picture. I'm sure it's the same one you're thinking of where the townhouses and shops and et cetera dotted the area between the stadiums. And I think the return on investment that we have at the banks right now, I mean, the investment being over $2 billion, is, you know, I think one business leader said it's a C or a B minus or a C plus, I don't know. But I don't think it is what we envisioned, but I think people are not patient. And to get that picture happening would have required more patience. You may remember when Bill Butler was the preferred developer for a few years, and nothing happened those years either.
Well, you know, the Mayor Cranley yesterday during City Council did say, you know, we can't look back now, we have to look ahead. And I did think that was, you know, kind of spot on, but it doesn't have a master developer. And I just, when I look around the country at the various, you know, developments, like I just recently had an opportunity to tour the wharf in Washington, D.C., and it has one developer and one vision, and it's everything that, you know, people want. It's, I would not say that it's very mixed. It is very gentrified. So I'll put that out there, but it's one cohesive, you know, place that all looks the same, and it's not what we have here.
No, I think we have a mishmash of Europe. Of stuff, and I still think there's time to save it, and I think there are plots of ground obviously that need to be carefully considered, and we do have a park that I walk down there about every day because I live close to it, and the parks on the riverfront, Jason, you asked why I'm so passionate about parks. I mean, I love the parks on the riverfront. They run all the way from Smale all the way over to, you know, way past the boathouse. So they're great. And I think that those kind of things make a city. So anyway, hope springs eternal, you know. I mean, I think the Joint Bank Steering Committee or Working Group or whatever it is, I even forget the name sometimes, it's clear that the elected leadership, one way or the other, is going to have to lead on this and take charge and not defer to that group that has been ineffective.
And for listeners, to be clear, you are a member of that group. And,
just going
to
say that.
You know,
I'm a member of that group, although I'm persona non grata on that group. But I am a member, but we don't meet very often. I think we've probably had three meetings in 2 or 3 years.
Which is interesting because it was last year this month that Bob Castellini, who's the chair of that group and the owner of the Reds, told me in an interview that, he agreed, like, the criticism of the lack of transparency over that group or the lack of them meeting was an issue, and said to me on the record that it would begin meeting quarterly. It hasn't met one time this year.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, Mr. Castellini usually says when you ask why, he'll say, because we got nothing to talk about. I think that, unfortunately, is the state of affairs right now. And
but I will go back to Jason's call. It was like a column after column last week. I encourage, you know, he tweeted them out the other day. I encourage people to go back and read these because it's pointed takes on, you know, things that are going on in our community. But we were promised, you know, really this big office tower development. And it was very much a part of the conversation of what should happen, right? But with a promise of something like that, you think, well, maybe this does need to go forward as is. But then I didn't hear anything about it for 1 year, and that, I think, is where the steering committee comes in. It's the steering committee's job, maybe. I'm not criticizing you.
No, that's fine. I mean, look, I was at that now famous meeting, at least it's famous for me, when I got in a tiff with the owner of the Reds and the Bengals. And
Possibly captured by me.
And Tom Gableman came up to me and whispered, I got a big announcement. And the big announcement was this office building. And I just kind of to myself said, I'll believe it when I see it, because it just didn't seem like, given the office market situation in the city, that there was any appetite for that kind of development. And sure enough, it never happened. Now, with what's happening in the city and the country now, I'm sure nobody's going to build a new office building anytime soon.
Was that a?
That is not what they're saying still, but I see what you're saying.
Isn't that a concern, Charlie? And I think you've been speaking your mind on this, and you know, appreciate you doing that. Is that because you care, and you've been speaking your mind about the bank's steering committee not meeting? And isn't that the job of the committee, is to oversee the project and to be open and transparent with the public and to discuss these things publicly? And
Jason, I think that's the mission, but I think we've lost our way. And I think we've lost our way for so long that we have ceased to be effective. And I do not believe that group can be repaired. And that's because we were constituted to do all the things that you just said. And we've done very few, if any, of them. And I think there needs to be a new approach. And that falls to, in my mind, elected people to lead on. And I hope that they do. I don't think it's going to change much as long as the Tom Gableman, Mr. Castellini, you know, view this as their little project. As long as that happens, I just don't see. I see more fighting and more difficulty in the future.
Let me ask you this question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, or maybe I do. So, do you think it's a conflict of interest for Katie Blackburn and Mr. Castellini to sit on this steering committee when decisions actually affect their businesses, which flank the banks?
Is the Pope Catholic? I mean, yes. I mean, yes. I mean, I do. I mean, obviously, going forward on the banks, what is going to be the most contentious and expensive issue? It's going to be the future of the athletic teams. Now, some people think, well, we built the stadiums, we're done with that. No. I think, as everybody knows, the Bengals are going to continually ask for multi-million dollar upgrades. The Reds will also want improvements. So going forward, the biggest factor in terms of expense on the banks is likely to be those teams. And to have the owners of those teams making those decisions, I do believe, is a conflict of interest. See, this is why I get in trouble, because I say stuff like that.
But no. I mean, in the purpose of serving the citizens, the truth, you know, people saying what they actually mean, it's so important, because we don't get that all the time from political leaders, but you still are. And you were known for this when you were the mayor too, like just speaking your mind and telling the truth.
But Sherry, sometimes you got to bite your tongue a little bit. I mean, I don't have to now, but sometimes you just got to bite your tongue a little bit. I mean, you guys know stuff that might be happening behind the scenes. And by the way, I don't want to change the subject necessarily, but I read your story today on the streetcar, and my head's spinning because I didn't understand that money transfer that maybe you can talk about sometime. But anyway, sometimes you got to bite your tongue on things.
I will say this on the streetcar. I'm not going to get into that money swap right now because I don't want people to shut this off, and we have a lot more to talk about with you. But the thing I will say about the streetcar is I am desperately trying not to make it the number one issue at City Hall, but it is impossible not to cover. The streetcar is not running now, and there's always a plan here, a plan there, a plan other here, right, to get it restarted. And I feel like I do have to cover that, but I am trying to make things about the parks levy, you know, about what the design of the banks is going to look like.
Yeah.
And I do keep getting pulled back into the streetcar. It is not the number one issue in the city. It is not.
That's supposed to be my opinion.
I don't think like the gods. Stop here, but I don't think that people would really disagree on either side of this issue.
You sound like the Godfather 3. I keep trying to get out, and they keep pulling me back in.
Charlie, speaking of city politics, yeah, the mayor's race is now official with David Mann officially in, PG Sittenfeld officially in. What's your take? Are you gonna? You think you'll weigh in and endorse? What do you make of that race right now?
Well, I don't think it's any revelation that PG's been working longer and harder, at least at the money raising part. I don't think money is everything in a mayor's race, and I think we've seen that on a few occasions over the years. I think the city electorate tends to be pretty, you know, they're pretty smart when it comes to the election of a mayor. And we've seen things, you know, big swings. I mean, going back to when I was ran and when John ran and you know, even when Wenstrup ran, I mean, he made a run at the end. So I with very little resources. So I think, I think it's early. I think it could go up and down. I don't think anybody is surprised that PG is favorite now. And, you know, David and I go back way too long. He's a good guy. PG's a very bright guy. So I think it's early, and I'm not that I matter, but I'm going to hold my fire for a while.
Do you think that we will see another candidate get in, African-American or not?
You know, Sherry, I keep thinking, like probably most people, that there will be an African-American candidate. But then you got to match that with a person. I mean, there's got to be a person. Now, I don't know what Yvette Simpson's doing, and obviously Eric Kearney with his wife on council. You know, so I don't know who that person would be. But certainly, if a strong African American gets in the race, I would view that person as making it at least through the primary. And maybe it's Alicia. I'm sure she don't want to talk about that now. Because she's got a race in a few months, but you know, maybe I can see that, and you got to figure that person's going to be one of the two. So, I think so. And I think probably you guys think so. And kind of, but when it gets down to putting a name on it, I just don't know who that would be.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there's like some sort of drop dead deadline of like, if we don't see this third candidate by November, December, like, is there some sort of deadline that it going past that makes it unfeasible for a run?
No, I mean, I don't, because I mean, I think it depends on circumstances, you know. I mean, I think, I hate to make it personal and good in the history, but I think when I ran against Curtis Fuller, he filed like a week before the deadline. I mean, and that was because of the peculiar circumstances that existed then. But I think that there could be peculiar circumstances again. I mean, who knows what? It's one thing you know, Sherry, is that there's a surprise a day down at 801 Plum Street. So I think the drop dead date is the filing deadline. And I'm not even sure when that is. So
I do think that the pandemic did put tamped down things a little bit, just because, I mean, you can't really fundraise in a pandemic. You just can't. I mean, we saw David Mann really come out of the gate very, soft with just a letter and not really an announcement. And even PG's was not like what you think of when you think of a mayoral announcement. I mean, John Cranley's mayoral announcement was at the 20th Century Theater in Oakley with hundreds of people. Had 20 very strategic people. Some of them I thought might run for mayor. Clearly, they're supporting him. That was done on purpose, I'm sure. And so we're getting off to a soft start, I will say, I think.
Well, time goes by, and it's like we're 100 days from the election for president. I think some people are, I know when I see that, I'm like, wow, that's pretty soon. We've lost a little time through all of this and our concern about other matters. And so I think you are correct. I mean, we're getting pretty late in the season. And I do think I will say one thing. When I was talking about an African-American candidate, put a name on it, everybody thought that Mark Mallory might be that name. And he's obviously a strong one. And he endorsed PG, and I think that was a big thing for PG.
And announced him, not just endorsed. He was there. He introduced PG at his announcement. Like, that was a very telling moment.
It was.
Essential Mallory, too. It was such a good moment. And he called PG a friend, and he was very much himself. He wore a suit, and he talked about the city going forward, and he declared that he really thinks that PG is the best candidate.
And that's big. I served with Mark on a board that John appointed us to, the railroad board, and he's always calm and smooth and does a good job.
Charlie, I know I want to ask you a little bit about what's going on in the world right now, and sort of you referenced 2001, your 2001 race against Curtis Fuller, and you mentioned the circumstances. The circumstances were that he was jumping in that race after the 2001 unrest in the wake of the officer-involved shooting.
Right.
You've now, in your role, you're an attorney with Calfee, Halter & Griswold, and you and John Cranley had a panel, maybe a month or so ago, earlier this summer, where you really talked about how to lead a city through times like this. And clearly, obviously, we've had some of that again, not just here in Cincinnati, but across the country. What have been your thoughts and on that in how John Cranley's handled it? And have you been able to be there to say, hey, John, this is how you should handle it. This is how you shouldn't handle it. What role have you played?
Well, John and I are friends going back a few decades. So I won't say I don't talk to him, but because I do. But I think I'm more of a sounding board than an advisor. I mean, and you both know him. He's a man of his own mind and a strong one. And so I mostly just kind of let him talk through things. But I do think that he acquitted himself well. I think the city acquitted itself well, and I think it's not over. I think it's an ongoing process. I personally took some, I don't think pride's the right word, but I was happy that some of the decisions that we made way back when, like getting the Justice Department and the Collaborative and et cetera. I mean, I'm happy when I see that those things have produced results that are tangible, that people still use, that it's not the same as it was in 2003, but it certainly is part of the foundation of how the city polices and treats people, and I think on that score we're a long way from perfect, but we're better than most. And I think John, who authored it, some of it with David Pepper and Alicia Reese and some other people in federal court. I mean, I think John will go back to it and considers it a living, breathing document that is helpful in difficult times.
You, funny, we're getting rolling. We dove right in all these huge issues and didn't even really ask you like kind of what you're up to these days. I know you're doing government relations and legal work for CalFee, and you work with a great team there with John Mongaluzzo, Megan Glenn, former city attorney Sean Suter, and a lot of other folks. What do you do in your role there? What else you've been doing just for fun? And also, I want to ask you. I'll wait and hear that, and then I want to ask you something else.
Well, I have 9 grandkids, you know. Not that I'm grandfather of the year, but they do live in town, and they are of an age where you want to, you know, they're between 1 and 12. So, and I think Sherry at least knows one of my kids. So, they're a handful, and they I enjoy them. I do this railroad board, and I grew up as a caddy at Cincinnati Country Club, and I used to take my money and get on the bus to Evansville and play golf. And now I still play golf. And, that's, you know, life's pretty simple these days, Jason. And I value that.
Yeah. I know you ran for judge in, was it 2014?
I did.
Have you ever gotten the itch to run for elected office again? Do you ever think you will, or is that something you still?
Well, no, I don't think about it much. I did think the probate court was a nice fit for me. It didn't work out for me, and I should add parenthetically that Judge Winkler was very nice to me when my daughter adopted my now grandson. So, yes. But anyway, I don't think that's, they still have a rule in this state that you have to be under 70 to run for judge. And, that big event happens for me next year. So,
I mean, we weren't going to ask your age, but oh my.
I keep thinking of the Simon and Garfunkel song, "How Terribly Strange to Be 70," and this, and I used to think, my God, how old could people get? How could somebody get to be 70? But
well, the older you get, the more you realize the age is young.
I'm fighting it. I'm trying not to let the old man in, Sherry, but sometimes it creeps. So everything's good, you know. I'm everything is fine. How are you guys doing?
I will say I'm trying to convince my parents to move here. I mean, I talk about I'm from Youngstown all the time, but you know, we do have a 12-year-old, and I want them to come and be with us because my job is here.
Well, you know, when people get a little older, they like to stay home, so that might be a hard move for them.
I'm not successful at this point, but anybody who knows if I've ever interviewed you, right? I'm pretty convincing.
Well, how about you, Jason? You got how many? How old?
7 and 3, 2 boys. And I'll tell you, Charlie, right when you asked that question, my immediate thought was trying to figure out this school thing.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I feel for a lot of people out there, no matter what their situation is, whether they're rich or poor or middle class or whatever. This is particularly though folks who don't have the resources and, you know, or single parent homes, or I'll tell you, this is I didn't think this is going to be the biggest challenge for us as two, you know, working parents, but I'll tell you, wow. it is a, it's a really tough thing. I feel for people out there who are just trying to handle or, you know, deal with this right now.
Yeah, I said to my daughter-in-law.
Yeah, go ahead.
I said, well, I just said to my daughter-in-law a couple weeks ago, what are you going to do with the kids? She said, you know, I'm thinking about keeping them home. I mean, I said, how do you do that? She said, well, you know, I'm just not comfortable. And my other daughter is a teacher at a third grade at Cincinnati Public. And she's like, Dad, it's going to be really hard to teach if the kids don't come to class. But
yeah,
she recognizes the difficulty, but she's like, I don't know how this is going to work very well for the kids.
You should be careful. I think your kids might be suggesting that Grandpa needs to help. You need to read between the lines
there. Jerry, that's one thing they won't do. They know that I'm not very good at that. So they didn't let me babysit. Well, one time they let me babysit, and I screwed it up so bad that they never asked me again. So anyway, so. But anyway, that's it. That's all I know, guys.
Good stuff, Charlie. Always appreciate you.
Well, I always appreciate you guys, and you do a great job. And I know these days, I can remember the days when I think reporters would write an article a week or one every 2 weeks or something, and you guys have to produce a lot more content than they did years ago. And I admire the fact that you can stay on top of it and work so hard. So good luck.
Thanks. Good people like yourself who are willing to talk to us. And
well, I'll always tell you, I've always got some hyperbole stuck in my head somewhere that I can. So if you ever need anything that, you know, is going to aggravate people, give me a call.
Thanks, Charlie. We'll talk to you. See you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks again to Charlie Lucan. I'll tell you, he's always candid. He got me a little stirred up there though when he asked how we were doing, and I started thinking about immediately the challenge, Sherry, of trying to balance kids going back to school and work and how everyone's handling this. And I'm not mad at anyone in particular. That's the world we live in. But I will tell you, my wife brings this up to me, started about 2 weeks ago, Sherry, and it has been a conversation that has dominated our household for the last 2 weeks, and we still haven't come up with a solution yet. We think we've got 4 of the 5 days figured out. We still have 1 day that we need to figure out, and we're at kind of wit's end about how we're going to do that. Are you guys, Sherry, with Jack, you guys,
well, the older your children are, the easier it is because they can more independently learn. Like at this point, you know, Alex is teaching a math. As our editors know, nobody wants me teaching anyone math or readers and stories. Occasionally you're like, are you sure that number is right? So I'm not the math teacher. Alex is going to have to do that. But for the most part, he can independently learn with some oversight of making sure he does that.
Yeah.
You know, if you have more than one child, if, you know, I heard in Oak Hills, I was watching, we live in Delhi, I was watching the Oak Hills big meeting about when we were going to start, how it was all going to go, and watching this meeting like a parent and not necessarily a reporter. And, you know, there was a CPS teacher who said, I have a teacher with my own, you know, set of issues teaching kids. And now I have, you know, 3 kids in the district. And I don't know what's going to happen. And listening to her plight was hard to hear. And everyone is just grappling with this different. This is, you know, we're talking about the election between Biden and Trump. We're talking about our own, you know, issues in the city and the county. But if you have a child, this is the number one thing that matters to you and affects your life, is your child's schooling, well-being. It trumps everything else. It really does. And I don't envy the people who have to make the decisions.
Yeah.
But the people who signed up to be on school board, I don't think we asked Mayor Cranley about this. When you decided to be mayor, did you think, well, I might need to lead in the pandemic, right? And he said he did think about the gravity of this. But I'm not sure if you run for school board, you think, oh, you think about the education of children and you want to affect that. I'm not sure you think I have to make the greatest health decision anyone's ever seen in our lifetime for, you know, in CPS, 37,000 kids.
Yeah.
In these districts all over the state. And so I don't know what the answer is. Nobody does, I'm sure.
I know. I did bring that up, and I want to be clear. Hey, I'm not complaining. I know a lot, millions of people in this country are in this boat. And yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I had a beer with a Cincinnati school board member, Mike Morosky, last week, and his dad, Dan. And, you know, you can just tell. I asked him about it, just, you know, shooting the breeze. And you can just tell, man, that is just it's an agonizing decision. And to know you have so many kids and parents' lives in your hands and decisions that you make, and you can just tell, like, man, when I asked them that, it's like that is just stressful. I could feel how stressful it was for him without him even answering my question, you know, or, you know, just sort of engaging in the conversation about it.
And the criticism they face for there's no way forward that you wouldn't be criticized because you don't actually have the answers.
Right.
Like in some things, there's a very clear answer and people can like it or not like it and feel one way or another, might be political. But in this, we don't know until we do it.
That's right. That's right. Charlie Lucan, what a gem he is. And, you know, just, you really value folks like that who speak their mind and
don't bite their tongue. He should never bite his tongue. Let's not give him any ideas on that.
Are candid, but are, you know, incredibly passionate and knowledgeable about city and local politics. And just really enjoyed that conversation and love asking him about all these different issues, because you know that he knows what's going on. He still talks to so many people and, you know, he keeps up with everything that's going on.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, we're rolling right now. We are now. Technically, we are in the fun segment of the podcast, and I think we teased this out perfectly last week, Sherry. You were in the middle of your staycation during last week's episode, and you were going to save your staycation memories and the events for this week. What did you do for your staycation?
Well, I think I do want to encourage people to take a staycation, first of all. I think I've read a lot of stories in our own newsroom. It's very hard to take a break right now and say, oh, I think I should take a vacation. There's nowhere really to go too much. And there's a lot of work to be done in everyone's businesses. And I think that's just a lot of people are feeling that internally. But I did plan the staycation. I just didn't take days off of work. I said, we're going to consciously do the things that Cincinnati has to offer. And I cannot be more glad that I did this.
Yeah.
I mean, the list was so long, I didn't even get to all of them. Like I planned that I'm like for another staycation next year. We went, I talked about this last week. We went on the SST boat on a lovely afternoon, but we did things too that, you know, that was kind of expensive. So, but we did three things too. We went to Caesar Creek Lake Park. We did not kayak. We went, there's a beach there. There is a public little, it's little beach. And we swam in the lake and, you know, we skipped rocks and we explored, and that didn't cost any money. And we went to Grant's, we did some history things. We went to Grant's birth house, you know, one room, drove out to New Richmond. I'd never been there before. It's just a lovely walk along the water. I went in an antique store for a little bit and poked around. We sat at the cafe on the river. I mean, that was such a great morning. And we went to, and then we went the other way. We went to William Henry Harrison's tomb. I had a friend in town, and I have my child too, of course. And I had seen it before because I'm writing like about the mysterious sword. Was it stolen or not stolen?
Yeah.
And I made an appointment and I went to see the museum for William Henry Harrison. And I learned a lot about him there. And I learned about, you know, a general that was POW from Cleves. And, you know, how he saved, you know, himself and others and got food. Like, I really had a great weekend. It was planned out of, like, the things. I looked at all of these things to-do list, like I said last week. And it was there was a lot to do here, and I was, it was a nice break in my own city. I actually had friends be like, "Where are you?" And I'm like, "I'm still in Cincinnati."
Yeah, no, it looks just from Facebook, look like you and Tom were having a great time, and
we folded in Alex, who was working, but he came along sometimes. Don't tell our editors. And Jax for some of the things. And so it was a good week. And a nice, you know, break from work. Even though we did the podcast, I never think of the podcast as work.
No, that's why I was on 2 weeks break. I was still doing the podcast because, it's just fun. And people really seem to be interested in it. Thank you so much to our listeners. What is one thing, Sherry, that you have not done yet in Greater Cincinnati, in the region, that you really want to do? For fun, by the way. So, fun thing.
I had on the list, and we did not do it, was the Swan Boats.
And I believe
they are at Whitewater Park, and that is something we have not done yet.
What is a Swan Boat?
I think they're like pedal boats on the lake that are like, you know, just like an outdoor, you know, lake activity.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they still exist, to be honest. Well, now I'm going to have to look into them a little bit next week. But I had heard about them, and I thought that sounded really fun.
So anyone needs any advice on what to do in Cincinnati? Hey, I'm struggling. I want to go do something fun.
I have a printed itinerary that I made. It included, like, where we would eat dinner outside. So, like, outside dining options that I researched so we didn't have to go indoors, which there's so many more options to do that. Like, we went to Pep and Dolores. We went to Mays. I have to say, like, I'm really glad some of these streets are shut down and the city made it possible for outdoor dining at these restaurants. I mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't go indoors. It's everybody's comfort level. But my comfort level is really, like, the outdoors at this point. And just the idea that we are in a pandemic did give us those options.
It's great stuff. Like as I was saying, that if you're looking to do anything fun, email our cityhall/fun guru, Sherry Coolidge it's scoolidge@inquirer.com.
I will share some of our activities for sure.
Or if you even have recommendations. And also on Twitter @Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. Thanks so much for your feedback, everyone. Really appreciate, you know, through this summertime, I know people are all over the place. You're not commuting or you're working at home, but you've continued to really support this podcast, and just can't thank you enough. Would ask too, you're interested in all these local issues. If there's a local issue you would like for us to tackle, hey, this is not, you know, this is obviously we have a special guest, but this is part of our journalism. This is part of our weekly routine of writing columns for me and writing watchdog stories with Sherry and covering City Hall. Is that, hey, we do reporting here on the podcast. We've broken some stories here on the podcast. So if you have any ideas of stories or topics or guests that you would like for us to tackle or discuss on here, again, just email us, again, scoolidge@inquirer.com, jwilliams@inquirer.com. @JWilliamsCincy on Twitter. And I would love to hear from you. And again, thank you so much. And we will catch you next week.